Welcome to this episode of The Cutty Strange with your hosts Daniel Steffi and Nick Wang, where we focus on select Bay Area artists with music rooted in the avant-garde, functioning in the world of do-it-yourself and community organization. Our guest today is San Francisco-based artist Greg Gorlin, aka Greg Garbage, Black Thread, Vibrating Garbage, Cascading Fragments, and a few others, and founder of tape label Turmeric Magnitudes. Give a brief background of your roots and how your music has evolved to what it is today.
Let's see. Roots began when I guess I was in eighth grade or so, and a friend of mine, well, let's see, I guess I shouldn't get too detailed, but a friend of mine, you know, picked up guitar and got me into DC, I guess post-hardcore, like Fugazi, and listening to some mainstream stuff before then, but basically I discovered the DIY ethic in the DC hardcore scene or post-hardcore scene or whatever it was, Discord Records. And so I took some guitar lessons for a couple years and grew increasingly disenchanted with my inability to, you know, finish a product, I guess, or get myself to a level where I felt like I could, you know, express myself fully. And around that time, I guess I got into abstract stuff like ambient music. And initially I liked it, but it was also kind of a way to do easy music. Like I could do it at home. I didn't need to rely on forming a band or, you know, developing the social skills required to get like a rock thing together. And so I guess it was like a, sort of conglomeration of various lifestyle, you know, elements, like moving to San Francisco. Suddenly I'm without space and everything's super expensive. And when I moved out here, you know, there's a few bands I played in for a while, and I just got more and more into bedroom music and electronics, and took a class at City College, and that one was with Brian Fergus. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah,
he's great. So, yeah, long story short, just kind of lots of gateways as far as influences and roots, and wound up lots of people along the way. My friend Paul in high school turned me on to most of the basic electronic stuff, like, you know, Aphex Twin, and, Current 93, stuff like that. So.
You release your music under a lot of different monikers, Greg Gorland, Greg Garbage, Black Thread, Vibrating Garbage, and a number of others. Could you give us the reasoning behind releasing your music under all these different names?
I guess the monikers have kind of all the reasons you mentioned, plus I like to do a lot of really eclectic sounds, and if I did them all under one moniker, I guess that could be cool, and a collaborator of mine, Brendan Landis, and I have had plenty of debates about whether to split things up or keep them all together. He kind of likes to throw everything in one pot, but for me, I kind of like to have the mental divisions of working on one project and putting a lot of energy into it for a couple days or week or whatever, and then just totally dropping it and moving on to something fresh, or bringing fresh ideas to an old moniker and, you know, working on that, and kind of talking about like how I used to play in bands. It's kind of like mental bands, but yeah. I'm the only member and half the time, and yeah.
How has the Bay Area, and in your case notably San Francisco, helped influence and shape your musical aesthetic?
The Bay Area rules. I think, like I said, before I'd moved out here, I hadn't really discovered a group of people that would, you know, give a rat's, can I say ass? But yeah, I mean, like I said, I hadn't toured. I'd only played a few local shows in DC, like maybe a dozen or so, and nothing against the DC scene. I mean, I've since gone back a number of times and had a blast there, but I definitely found a group of people that I could regularly correspond with. I mean, you guys have played here at the Mind Gaze Hut where we're sitting right now a couple times, and I remember back in the day when this was under different management, and there's all these spaces where you can do things, and that's a pretty special thing in an area where a lot of people pretty much can't afford to live here. And
truth,
like I said, San Francisco, just the rent in and of itself and the space, like when I was living at the there's a venue, the Golden Trapper Keeper, you guys might remember.
I don't think I remember that.
It was over on Hay Street, and Chad Corby, Chrome Genie, was the master tenant. And then it was like a flat, and that's where they were doing the Noise Pancakes for a while, if folks aren't familiar with that, it's a like uniquely San Francisco thing where a fellow has been running this series, which is pretty much all noise, although there's a healthy dose of a variety of experimental stuff from Mills College here in the East Bay and a couple touring acts, and he sort of throws them all together and cooks some pancakes, and everyone hangs out on Sunday mornings. It's so once monthly. And so that was going on at this house, and I eventually moved in. Anyway, to get back to the point of San Francisco shaping the sound, I was living there in a room that was 6x8, and so I had to fit my futon, all my gear, everything in there, and you know, the necessity of having to simplify the setup has definitely shaped things.
I hear that. So we're gonna listen to one of your tunes here. We have it queued up. It's Like Shining Blood by Black Thread. Thank you. So that was Like Shining Blood by Black Thread. Greg Gorlin is our guest today. And what do you want to tell us about that last piece we just heard?
Well, it's pretty simple track. There's just one cassette loop, and it's on a Tascam 4 track. So there's two stereo channels, and I'm just playing the... I recorded two loops from, I think it was Hearts of Space or something like that, kind of at random, and put them on both sides of the cassette, which are, you know, playing simultaneously. And for whatever reason, it was total luck, but I liked the sound of it, and so I basically just crossfade between the two loops, and that's it. Just a little piece.
And so
added a little reverb and compression, and that's about it.
And so if they're playing on both sides of the cassette, is like, so one side playing backwards since the four-track machine, or?
Right. Well, the way the four-track, you know, like you mentioned, there's two sides which normally would play backwards, but on a like a Tascam four-track, you have access to all four tracks simultaneously, so you can record them forward. So they're both playing forward, although one of them's kind of drony, and I think it's kind of ambiguous. I can't really remember whether it was recorded backwards or forwards, but
okay.
It's possible to get all four tracks playing forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I like to do that because I've got four discrete loops or four discrete sounds, and I can bring them in at different times. So for a lot of my performances, I'll have like eight different loops on two loop tapes, which are about 2 or 3 seconds each. And I have access to eight different looping sounds at once. So yeah, it's pretty simple usage of the four track to.
Cool. So I guess in addition to like the four track recorder, is there any other technical stuff that you use, like any gear that you use for putting your pieces together? And I guess how similar or dissimilar is that for the setup that you use for live performance?
So for studio stuff, it's a little bit more like anything goes, but I try to keep it as simple as possible. So the four tracks are pretty much the basis of most of my music, although I've been doing a lot of digital stuff in Pure Data. And I run everything into Cubase, which is a DAW, digital audio workstation. So that's where I do all my editing and, you know, processing, reverb, panning, compression, EQ.
So with like playing and touring with like a kind of compact or small setup, I guess, do you find that the limitations of using like a small amount of stuff that you can kind of just like throw into a backpack is kind of central to what you're doing? So like kind of like working within a certain like fixed set of limitations and like...
Yeah. I think it's kind of like the whole classic like different artistic philosophies of starting with all possibilities and just kind of running amok. And some people really like to do that. But I guess for me, I prefer to have a very limited set of possibilities, and I sort of choose that beforehand. And I think both your musics remind me of that as well, like, and especially in the improv scene, I mean, people kind of pick an instrument, and that instrument, whether it's a synthesizer or, you know, tape loops or guitar or whatever they're playing, they kind of explore the different possibilities within that, with that environment. And once again, kind of going back to the different projects, basically I sort of pick most of the limitations beforehand, whatever kind of gear I'm going to use or what sort of sound I want to get or what I'm trying to communicate, and then stick within those limitations and try to find new possibilities.
Excellent. So the next track we're going to listen to here is another Black Thread number, Blossom Cascade. Anything you want to say about it?
It's two loops, and each one was created with the, like I described earlier, the open reel Frippertronics style. And I'm playing a MC202 synthesizer into it, and that's pretty much the whole thing. I think the first loop I slowed down
and there's some processing on the track in Cubase. I think I added some distortion and pretty heavy compression on the second part, so it gets a little shoegazy, I guess, or noisy. And I think the track happened about the same day I got in this bike accident last year. And it wasn't super bad, but it was kind of surreal because I think I was still in that process of evaluating the track and deciding whether I liked it and if it needed anything. I think I got home from this bike accident, like cleaned up my blood and listened to the track, and it was like, it's just a very relaxing kind of like, good. I'm still here. I'm going to put this track out. So anyway, that's the story.
Beautiful. So this is Blossom Cascade by Black Thread.
Thank you.
So that was Blossom Cascade by Black Thread, and Greg Gorlin is in with us this month. And could you give us a rundown, the what, when, and why of your tape label, Turmeric Magnitudes?
Sure. Yeah, I started it because I started about a year ago and kind of put it on hiatus about a month ago to work on a couple other labels that have been...
Which other ones?
Well, so there's this label Cascading Fragments, which I started sort of simultaneously to Turmeric Magnitudes, and I wasn't really happy with the aesthetic of it, and so I sort of put it on hiatus, and then all this is preceded by a label that I ran with a friend of mine, Paul Grimes, who I talked about earlier in the interview, who currently lives on the East Coast and is involved with a lot of non-musical activities like building a house in the woods and that kind of thing. So that label's sort of on hiatus, and the label's called Donkey Disc, and we've been doing that since about 2007. And I learned a lot about how to do art, that visual packaging, and he's great with that stuff, and I'm not, so I sort of copped a few ideas from him. And last year when I started Turmeric, it was because I had such a large amount of work that I was just sitting on my hard drive and sitting on tapes in my room, and I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't really have the patience or I mean, to be honest, I guess I'd probably been rejected by a couple labels and or done successful releases with labels, but found them to be slow, or the art wasn't to my satisfaction, or just, you know, for whatever reason, I just wanted to do it myself, and I had tons of material. So I sort of like started messing around with photocopiers and cardstock and came up with the visual style label, and then from there it was just about going into like production mode and putting stuff out, and we did the Daniel Steffi release and a few other local artists like Headboggle and Ben Tinker, Tara Scree Krishnan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and a couple international artists. And so at 80 tapes this year, I decided just to put it on hiatus and work on some other stuff. So I'm currently doing this label Cascading Fragments, which is like, I guess the atmosphere is a little darker and a bit more organic or noise influenced, and less with the eclecticism of Turmeric. I guess that's where it's at now. So.
Excellent. So now we're going to take another listen to, this is a Greg Gorlin track, Spoil, with the B in parentheses, I assume the B side of the tape.
Correct, sir.
Anything on this one, or should we just give it a listen?
Let's just give it a listen.
Thank you.
So that was Spoils by Greg Gorlin, who's in studio with us on the Cuddy Strange. And Greg, can I ask, where do you see the future of music in the Bay Area heading?
I guess for the past year or two, I feel like San Francisco has sort of seen kind of maybe a critical mass of like, I mean, as people may or may not be aware, a lot of artists and musicians have been moving to the East Bay from San Francisco for probably the past 5 or 10 years. I don't claim to be an expert on that or gentrification or anything like that, but basically San Francisco is changing, and in the past year or two, it's kind of been at a situation where a lot of the main venues for the kind of music that we do have, you know, either gone under or run into trouble with the city, or one thing or another has led to their hiatus or closure. But recently, in the past couple months, a lot of venues have been springing back up. There's Vacation SF and Second Act in the Hate, and there's The Lab reopening in the Mission, and yeah, so there's things happening in San Francisco again, which I'm really happy to see. As far as the entirety of the Bay, I don't really know if there's much I can say about it beyond I hope it continues to be vibrant. Life-changing ministries in Oakland and Terminal are, and Mind Gaze Hut, of course, where we're sitting now, are extremely important for underground music in the Bay, experimental stuff. There's the occasional bar show, stuff like that. As far as artists and labels, there's still plenty that have been around for a while, like Tusco Embassy, lots of artists like Headboggle in the city, and Ratskin Records in Oakland, the Mills College crowd, Andrew Weathers, just kind of throwing a couple names out, are doing some really good stuff. The improvisational scene is really strong out here, the Luggage Store in the city, lots of places in the East Bay, Berkeley Arts. So yeah, basically with all that stated, I hope all that continues, and there's hopefully an influx of fresh meat in terms of artists and labels coming in and bringing the energy.
Yeah. So where would you personally like to see the trajectory of music head, and not just in the Bay Area, but the world as we move into the future? And do you see any major issues arising in terms of the future of music in worldwide?
Well, I guess technology is probably the first thing that comes to mind. It's definitely changing, and demographics as well. Societies are getting older, and I guess what I would like to see in terms of the future of global music is focus, because like you say, there's so many options available to people for nothing. You can download all sorts of incredibly powerful software. And I guess if I had to impose my opinion or vision or whatever on something that is pretty organic and is just gonna develop the way it develops, I'd say the philosophy that works for me and a lot of the artists that I like is to kind of pick some limitations and work within those and attempt to find a voice with limitations rather than try to do everything.
And so previously you mentioned getting Cascading Fragments up to speed with releasing new music and going to play in Seattle. I guess what else is on the horizon for you in terms of like new work that you're planning on doing or new kinds of material you're trying to engage with, or just new projects or collaborations?
Oh my gosh, so many. Well, for starters, that tour is going to be Eugene, and this is in early November.
I think the 5th in Eugene at the Boreal with, or Boreal, however you pronounce it, with Juice Machine, who I love, mentioned him previously, and Nick Hoffman,
who runs the label Pilgrim Talk, and I really like his stuff a lot. He's released
a lot of South Korean improv artists, and is just a really fabulous musician. And
so that'll be a great show in Eugene.
Then we drive up to Portland, and I have no idea where we're playing. But we're playing somewhere. I think we're playing at the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum.
Great name. And that'll also be with Juice Machine. I don't know who else is playing that show. And then the 7th and 8th is the Pen Up Fest that I mentioned previously, and that's going to be mostly noise freaks, and it's probably going to be pretty wild. Although I did get the disclaimer to not, you know, like,
if there's going to be any bodily fluids, to let her know, the woman who's organizing it, let her know beforehand. So that's always good sign, you know.
It's very well run, so I'm pretty impressed. So far, just the level of professionalism is really high.
Clearly,
the
those are the questions they're asking.
I was pretty impressed. Yeah. I mean, most noise festivals is like that, except without the pre-question or
disclaimer type stuff. So, and then after that, I'm planning, I don't know if I should mention, but I'm planning some international stuff in the next maybe year or so. I've never left the country, so that would be incredible. A friend of mine, Lorenzo Abattoir,
from Italy, who performs as Nascatari, is coming in for a second tour next year, and we're talking about doing the East Coast. But those are pretty, you know, in the planning stages, I should say, so I don't want to elaborate too much on that. But basically, I plan to keep doing tapes, recording tons of stuff, and finding new sounds, refining them if I can, and
touring. That's pretty much it.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being here with us this evening. Greg Gorlin in the studio at the Mind Gaze Hut. We're going to go ahead and finish things up here with one more piece. This is Wires and Relays 23.
Thank you for tuning in to The Cutty Strange, where our guest this week was Greg Gorlin. Next month on the program will be composer, sound artist, and tiki bar enthusiast Ryan Page out of Alameda, California. This episode of The Cutty Strange was produced by Daniel Steffi and Nick Wang and broadcast through WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, New York. Recorded and produced on location at the Totally Intense Fractal Mindgaze Hut in Oakland, California.